This is The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. 144 days from now, that's when Americans will pick a president, and many of the voters will be going to the polls and wondering, why is the menu so small? There are other parties, yes, but if history serves us, most people will limit their choice between the Republican and the Democrat candidate. So how did we end up with these two candidates? What was the selection process? Was it fair, and did it serve democracy, or did it serve the interest of the parties? And did the votes of the participants really matter? There's a lot of dissatisfaction about the process now. People are wondering if the system is rigged with superdelegates, closed primaries, caucuses, and other artificial limitations to full participation. Texas Public Radio is joining the national conversation with NPR's A Nation Engaged project to ask these questions, along with other member stations who are asking, do you think your vote mattered? Are you excited about going to the polls in November? Are you disappointed about how the primary season turned out? Do you think the conventions could be or should be more unconventional this go around? The Dump Trump movement is looking for some traction still, and Senator Bernie Sanders has refused to concede to Hillary Clinton despite the math. And apparently both party nominees are not popular. So what do you think? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. Email us at thesource@tpr.org. We're joined this half hour by Cal Jolson, professor of political science at Southern Methodist University, and Mark Jones, a fellow in political science at the Baker Institute at Rice University. And welcome to The Source, both of y'all.
Well, thank you.
Thanks for having us.
Cal Jolson, what do you think? We've got both Bernie Sanders, Senator Bernie Sanders, and Donald Trump, the GOP presumptive nominee, saying the system is rigged. Is there some truth to that?
Well, it depends upon how you look at it. I think it's certainly the case that that people's votes counted in this election cycle, because we certainly wouldn't have ended up with Donald Trump as the Republican nominee if the Republican establishment and the Republican National Committee, which created the selection rules, had their way. So clearly popular opinion played a role. But it's also true that political parties have some right to set their own rules and to try to do so in a way that isn't just about the democratic process taking place that day, but about what the party has historically meant and what it means going forward. So these political parties are living entities over a series of election cycles, and their leaders are trying to protect that the institution and what it has meant and should mean in the future. And that, again, is why people like Paul Ryan are in such a difficult place in dealing with Donald Trump.
Mark Jones, then why are people convinced? I've heard this from folks out there saying that somehow Bernie Sanders was ripped off. He should have won the nomination. God, didn't you see all those people at those those rallies, and all the people on my Tumblr? They're all excited about Bernie Sanders, and how come Hillary Clinton won?
Well, I think if there's going to be a critique of less than democratic process, it's on the Democratic Party side, ironically, where the presence of about 15% of the delegates in this form being superdelegates provided Hillary Clinton with the margin that really allowed her to maintain a cushion and not have to worry about her overall victory. If we were looking at just the votes won in the actual primaries and caucuses and the delegates won there, Sanders was much closer. So that's the major area where the Sanders people are upset about the primary and caucus system, that is the superdelegates who almost exclusively support Hillary Clinton. They also were upset with Debbie Wasserman Schultz, the head of the DNC, and her, I guess, lack of really being a neutral actor in this process and leaning and supporting the Clinton campaign throughout the process.
Is it reasonable to assume that Debbie Wasserman Schultz, a Democrat, should have been a objective arbitrator in this type of process? Because Bernie Sanders was not a Democrat. He's never raised money for the Democratic Party. He's run against Democrats in the past. Suddenly he becomes a Democrat, and conveniently, and now the party is supposed to welcome him with open arms, Cal?
Well, certainly lots of voters expect that their vote should be weighted equally. And in general, it is. But I think let me just defend the superdelegates a little bit along the idea that I was talking about before, which is that the Democratic Party has a history, and it has a traditional platform. It stands for certain things, and Hillary Clinton has been serving those ideals for a long time, and as you suggest, Bernie Sanders has not. But the role of the superdelegates is to take the longer, more institutional view and to look at what is best for the Democratic Party in this election cycle and beyond. And those superdelegates concluded overwhelmingly that Hillary Clinton, because of her history, was better than Bernie Sanders. And I think that's legitimate. I think that there is a defense to be made of the superdelegates, even though that defense is not that they aid in the democratic process today and in this cycle, but they defend the institution of the Democratic Party over the longer term.
So defending the political institution, the party, that didn't work so well for the Republicans because a former Democrat is now their nominee, Mark Jones.
Well, no, I think this goes right to the point that Cal's making. If the Republican Party this cycle did not have any superdelegates at all, even the three members who represented the party institutionally from each state or district were technically bound to one candidate or another. And as a result, the party was unable to exercise the same amount of influence to protect its image and reputation, like was the case in the Democratic Party. Had it been the case that the Republican Party had approximately one out of every seven delegates out as a superdelegate, it's quite possible that Donald Trump would not be the party's nominee in November, and instead it would be someone perhaps such as Ted Cruz.
So after, you know, we're going to be moving forward, there's going to be a lot of rules changing at both of these conventions. Are they going to be looking to change things so that this doesn't happen again, Mark?
I think it's probably pretty doubtful that we're going to see much in the way of massive changes. The superdelegates on the Democratic side could get modified a little bit, but I would not expect them to get eliminated. We may, though, see perhaps the Republicans try to, perhaps not at the convention, but later on, go back to a new system that has some more partisan influence to try to avoid the debacle that they found themselves in this cycle, where their candidate, Donald Trump, doesn't represent Republican values or most policies, and also is likely to suffer a pretty significant defeat in November if current trends continue.
So the question is, does the primary voters' vote count? And if they're going into the Republican National Convention, some people managed to take the nomination away from Donald Trump. He got 13 million votes, the biggest vote getter ever in the history of the Republican Party in the primary process. That's a big question. Did those votes actually count? We're going to talk about that when we come back from the break. The phone lines are open. We invite you to call in. What do you think about this process? Would you like to see changed? 210-614-8980. This is The Source on KSTX. You're listening to The Source on KSTX. I'm David Martin Davies. Is there something wrong with how we pick our political party presidential nominees? There's buyer's remorse for the Republicans, and the Democrats are still feeling the burn of Bernie Sanders, who didn't get the nomination. So should we take a closer look at how superdelegates work, closed primary caucuses, mail-in voting, and ask what's more important, the needs of the party or the will of the people? Does your vote matter? Texas Public Radio is joining with NPR's A Nation Engaged project to ask these questions. Do you think your vote mattered? We're joined by Cal Gilson, professor of political science at Southern Methodist University, and Mark Jones, a fellow in political science at the Baker Institute at Rice University. So, Cal Gilson, any chance, though, that Donald Trump could be denied the nomination at the upcoming Republican National Convention?
No chance at all, unless he does something so extraordinary that there is a revolt, and then we'd have some anti-democratic issues to talk about, because he did win the Republican nomination fair and square, and he got those 13 million votes that you talked about. He is going to be the Republican nominee, and there may be a few people grousing about it at the Republican convention, but I don't think that he can be denied the nomination. I will say that there are some interesting things that probably need to be on the table. One of them is that the presidential nomination and selection process reflects the American federal system. The Democratic and Republican national committees try to write rules governing the primary and caucus process, but the states often push back and want to have their own control over the process. And that contest needs to, I think, respect both national and state interests. And then there are some other suggestions on how we might want to tier in the primaries in particular, either by having regional primaries in the West, the East, the Southeast, and the Southwest, where you might rotate who goes first in each election cycle. And another suggestion along the same lines is you might have five tiers, the 10 smallest states going first, the 10 largest states going last in June or something like that. So most of the voters get to watch several months of discussion before they have a chance to vote and really resolve the nomination. So there are some things that we might do, but any change, again, is contested between those at the national level and in the states, most of whom want to be first.
And if you're first, your interest of that state becomes out proportion to the rest of the country. That's why we care so much about corn consumption, because Iowa was one of the first involved.
Yeah, that's right. And both Iowa and New Hampshire are relatively unusual states. And the fact that they get to go first, and a lot of people do leave the field before you even get to South Carolina and other states, suggests that they do have an outsized influence. Whoever goes first would have a significant influence, but you might be able to change it up from one election cycle to the next, so it's not always Iowa and New Hampshire.
Let's go to the phone lines, 210-614-8980. We really want to hear what people think of the current primary system and how we came up with these candidates, and if you think your vote counts. Sean has called in. Sean, hi, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi there.
Hey.
First thing I was going to say was that, you know, with regards to the defense of the superdelegates, I found that to be, you know, it's a good answer. Yes, they're defending the party ideals along whatever lines, long-term lines. But the problem is that, you know, there's a strong demand, I think, for progress to be made. So even like in the case, I'm a Democrat. So like for Bernie Sanders, he may not be getting the superdelegates, but he has a lot of popular support. And if there wasn't any superdelegates, I think that there would be a lot more popular support for him, or he would see better return on his campaigning, so to speak. So
do you think that superdelegates provides some nimbleness for the party structure if something unexpected happens late in the game, say a leading candidate somehow gets indicted on federal charges, then the superdelegates can then, you know, adapt, right?
Not necessarily. I think that, like, once again, like, the whole purpose, I think, of the gentleman was saying with the superdelegates is there to kind of provide a balancing or a mitigating factor to someone who may be a little bit more on the radical side, like in the case of perhaps of Mr. Trump.
Okay.
But in the case, or even in the case of Bernie Sanders, because you pointed out, I believe, that, you know, he's not necessarily a true Democrat, you know, I guess by the current party definition. But, you know, that's not what the party, what the citizens are looking for right now. I think for a lot of young voters, they identify with Bernie Sanders, and they just don't see the return on their campaigning on that. So I just find it a little bit dissatisfying.
Okay, Sean, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. I'm going straight to the next caller with Hugh. Hugh, hi. Welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Yeah, my comment is a bit extended. I don't want my vote to count. I want to go back to where conventions actually determine the candidates, because they can't be bought as easily as an election can be. Right now, if Democrats in Texas decided to cross over and vote on the Republican primary, they could determine every Republican candidate, and the Republicans couldn't do anything about it. I want people who have worked for the party, who have listened directly to the candidates, I want them making the decisions. We have a convention here in San Antonio. It's not going to do anything. It's all about rah-rah. There's no elections or anything really going on there. We would never get people in office like Harry Truman, for example, with the election system. with a primary system. I want something between me and the election. Yes, vote in the election. No, vote in the primary.
All right, Hugh, thank you for that observation. And finally, Bobby, it's on the line. Bobby, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hello. I'm originally from Illinois, which is the home of all corruption in the United States, and from a county, Rock Island County, where in the 2010 elections, there were 4,000 more registered voters than there were individuals living in the entire county, and there was maybe 100,000 people in the county at the time. So for me, the number one issue is making sure that primary elections fall in line with federal election laws, and that if somebody's registered on one party, they can't also cast a ballot for another party, and enforcing and creating laws where we regularly purge the rolls and have people re-register, and that you're required to show some type of identification or proof that you're able to vote in an election. And until we do that, the parties are pretty much free to manipulate however they want.
Okay, Bobby, thank you for the call. So, Mark Jones, is that a concern, voter fraud in the primary races?
Well, really, the primaries, when they're actual direct primaries, there isn't the same issue of fraud, where you do potentially run into some issues related to fraud or at least manipulation. It tends to be often in the caucuses, which are run by the parties, and those tend to be a little more loosely run and a little more open to different interpretations of the rules. Perhaps not at the level of corruption you find in the Quad Cities or Chicago, but still that's always a potential concern. And it's often not due to corruption. It's just due to logistical incompetence in that the parties just simply are not able to carry out the task of running the caucuses in the same clear and transparent way that we can when we run primaries.
So, Cal Gilson, aren't we learning a lesson right now about the power of populism and demagoguery and how that can be a troublesome thing in a political system?
Well, certainly a lot of people think that Donald Trump is teaching us that we need to be careful about demagoguery, and we need to think about developing rules, as the Republican Party really did try to do after 2012. If you'll remember, Rince Priebus and the Republican National Committee did a study about what went wrong in 2012 when Romney lost to Obama. And they concluded that they were going to have to do better among Hispanics and better among single women and a bunch of other groups. But that sense didn't last more than the first 3 minutes of the first Republican debate, because all 17 of those candidates knew what the Republican primary electorate wanted to hear on topics like immigration. So an anti-Hispanic cast came into the debates again. So it's very difficult to create rules that make for a calm, reasonable, informative presidential selection process, but certainly we should keep at it.
But reforms do happen. We had the Texas two-step during the President Obama versus Hillary Clinton primary in Texas, and that was very deciding in who became the presidential nominee, and we lost the Texas two-step. So what happened there, Mark Jones?
Well, it came from the National Democratic Party, and that they decided that the party couldn't do both of those things at the same time, and particularly couldn't have the one process going with the primary and the other with the caucus. The caucus was also a good example of what I talked about earlier, where the Democratic Party in Texas was not able to handle logistically the 2008 caucus. Those numbers are pretty sketchy in terms of who actually participated and how votes were counted, particularly when contrasted with the primary process that was occurring simultaneously.
And that had a big, it weighed a lot in regards to who became the nomination, Cal.
Yeah, it did. As I recall that, Hillary Clinton won in the primary, but Barack Obama did better in the caucuses in the evening. And for people who don't remember the Texas two-step, if you voted in the Democratic primary during the day, then later that evening you were entitled to go to the Democratic caucuses. But only 5% or 10% of Democrats who voted during the day normally went to the caucus in the evening in 2008, because of the excitement over the choice between Obama and Clinton, a lot more people went, and it overwhelmed that caucus. But the caucus in the evening was for for Democratic Party stalwarts, for people who, as I was saying earlier, are kind of like superdelegates in the sense that they take the longer view. They're historical Democrats. They don't just show up and vote in the primary. So I sort of like the Texas two-step. But as Mark said, the turnout in 2008 just overwhelmed it and rendered it quite suspect.
So do you think we'll have any reforms, notable reforms, not in Texas, but maybe other states, important states, that'll change the way of voting is done in the primary system, Mark Jones?
I doubt we're going to see much in the way of change, and that is unfortunate because our primary and caucus system for choosing the president is something of a crazy quilt. It's not well designed, and it's not well understood, and as a result, it can lead to outcomes that are far from optimal from the point of view of the country as well as the parties. And Donald Trump's a great example of that. That's someone who, in a different context, would probably not be the Republican nominee, but because of the staging and sequence of the primary and caucus process and some of the errors made by Republican elites who waited too long to try to rally behind an opponent to Trump, the Republican Party finds him as their nominee, and that's likely to lead to some pretty disastrous consequences for the party both nationally in Senate elections and in San Antonio. For a couple of state reps and at least one member of the U.S. House, things are looking pretty bad because Trump's at the top of the ticket.
But we saw one candidate in the Republican side really show mastery of this complicated system. That was Ted Cruz. Cal Jolson?
Yeah, I think there's no question about it. He ran a really good campaign, shocking a lot of people, including the Republican establishment.
Right, and that's going to be
looked at. He and Trump, yeah. And worried about both of them.
And so that's something to watch in 2020, I believe. Cal Jolson, professor of political science at Southern Methodist University. Mark Jones, a fellow in political science at the Baker Institute at Rice University. Thank you so much. And we come back from this NPR news break. We're going to be talking about, is it time for gun control in America? Stay tuned.